Well, this brave woman faced immense challenges that could either crush her or could set her on a pathway to transformation. Will she discover her purpose? We'll find out today on The Bravehearted Woman. Hey, beautiful Bravehearts, it's Dawn Damon, Braveheart mentor and vision architect, and this is the Bravehearted Woman podcast. Here we talk all things mindset, health, goals, dreams, and habits for midlife women so we can design the second half of life as the best half of life. I know how scary it can be to arrive at midlife and find yourself stuck and unfulfilled. It's difficult to take brave steps that lead to transformation, but I've done it and you can too. Now I'm here to help you ignite the flame of your imagination so you can see what's possible. You can reach your goals and achieve all your dreams. Are you ready? Come on, let's get brave. Hey, beautiful Bravehearts, welcome back. Listen, my guest today is a mother of six and also a trauma survivor whose mission is to transform personal hardship into inspiration and advocacy. She is the CEO and founder of the Colin James Barth Outreach, a nonprofit dedicated to helping women-led households with resources and aid necessary to find security and stability in times of crisis. Her mission? Well, to encourage women to think resourcefully and always protect themselves without stigma or feelings of selfishness. Welcome, Julie Barth.
Hi, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Julie, I could not believe when I was reading your story, you became a caregiver at such a young age. I mean, you have an incredible story. Share with the audience your story, how it shaped you, your perspective on love, sacrifice, all the things, perseverance.
Well, I kind of feel like my life is two different chapters. Chapter one, I ended up marrying my childhood sweetheart. You know, he's my first kiss. We met back up in Chicago after, you know, going to separate colleges and doing our own thing. And it was like, I found the piece of myself that I'd been missing. And from literally the minute we met back up, we you know, things moved really quickly. And before we knew it, we had our first son, moved back to the suburbs that we were from. And, you know, I had always wanted a really big family. That was my goal. And my first pregnancy was, you know, not expected. You know, the second one was very, very hard to come by. So we were, you know, we had two miscarriages and, you know, we're very happy to find out that our second daughter was on her way, our second child, actually. But right from the get-go, it was like she just, there was something wrong because she wouldn't grow. But, you know, all the ultrasounds, you know, there were 40 of them, different specialists, amniocentesis, like everything looked okay on paper. She just wasn't growing. So, you know, at that point, I had some doctors that were telling me, you know, that she was going to come out and not be able to breathe, or that she had trisomy 18, which is 3 18 chromosomes. And, you know, really kind of pushing me toward, you know, you might really want to evaluate whether you're going to follow through with this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was never a question in my mind, unless even if you could show me that something was wrong, you know, I went off blind faith and there was a reason why. And luckily, she did stick around. And when she was born, however, she was very, very small. And when I say very, they thought she was going to be 5 pounds, but she came out 3.5. So from that point on, yeah. And we knew she was going to be small, but, you know, this is 2001 measurement error. You know, I don't know what it was like, but it certainly isn't what it is today. And yeah. So when she came out, they weren't equipped for her. So, you know, one thing led to another. And before I knew it, she was in the NICU for 3 months with a trach because they damaged her throat, which really spiraled into 4 years of traveling with her, trying to figure out, you know, what's globally wrong, but more, how do we get her to the next point? Because they had damaged her throat so severely, she couldn't breathe without a trach. So we ended up, you know, being able to, thank God, find the right people who then, you know, were able to repair her throat. Things are on the mend. You know, we were really, at this point, we were in our young 30s and thinking, wow, you know, we can get back to life. We can, because we had lost a significant amount of our social circle just because we had to, we couldn't get nursing. So, you know, we kind of started creeping back into life and had two more children. And when we used to have this huge Halloween party, and the day before the Halloween party, Colin, who's my husband, just, he wasn't acting like himself. Clearly something was up. And so long story short, he went into the hospital and within, a couple hours, we found out that he had stage four pancreatic cancer. And they said he has 2 weeks to live and, take him home and let him say goodbye. So it wasn't a very positive outlook for either one of us at that point.
Wow. I can't fathom getting that kind of news. And what did you do next? How do you not fold up in a ball and just opt out of life? You had to be resilient. You had to stand strong. You had children to take care of. How do you handle it when life continuously throws these unexpected challenges your way?
I think, it was a blessing at that point, which eventually probably turned into more of a curse. But I had this ability to, so many things that they told me would happen with Tatum never did. So whatever the medical community, I had a very different vision of the medical community at that point. And I came to understand that, no one can tell the future. They don't have a crystal ball. They can give you what their opinions are, but kind of came to a place in my heart where I was like, you know what, you can tell me what you want to tell me, but I'm going to believe what I want to believe, and I'm
This
going
is
with that.
Tatum, your daughter.
Yes, I'm sorry, Tatum is my special needs daughter.
That's okay. And so
Yeah.
you did discover as she was not growing correctly and all of the things that then there was eventually a diagnosis for her. Is that what you found out?
Yes.
Okay.
So again, there was no Google, probably, thank God, because I probably would
Yeah.
have driven myself insane. But people kept coming up to me when we would meet in the store, and they would say, "Is your daughter the one on that Discovery Channel show?" And you can imagine, I had not seen it. I don't know what they're talking about. And I was like, "No." And one of my best friends called, and she said, "I think I know what Tatum has." And I was like, "Well, good for you," because we had gone to major hospitals, Mayo Clinic. No one could diagnose her. I Googled something called primordial dwarfism. And, she was already 4 years old. The trach was out and she's doing better. And there was this belief by me that eventually, because that's what they tell you, she'll grow out of it. You won't even know she had a rough start. Kids are resilient, And in that moment, I recognized that she was not going to outgrow whatever we were, she was better. She was doing better, but she still had this pretty grim at that point diagnosis. Just, a lot of things that come along with it. So, after coming off of that, and kind of recognizing that, globally, it really didn't matter what was going on with Tatum. We had to be in the here and now. That is the way that I learned to navigate life was, I'm not going to think about the gravity of something because, it's that book, like, what to expect when you're pregnant, when you're
Yeah.
expecting. And you read all these things and you get yourself so caught up in what could happen and all the bad and, could go this way. I've always tried to shut those things out and just say, okay, I'm dealing with this and try and find that one thing that I can control or one thing to throw my energy in. Just throwing your energy into things that are just wasted energy and worry that may or may not come true. I don't know where that ability came from. Maybe just from fire drill after fire drill, I've learned to, take, it's not that I ignore what people tell me, but I do to this day. I try very hard not to do it anymore, but I'll go, I'll listen and I'll go, okay. And then I'll walk out and go, no, that's not for me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I handled it with Colin. They said he had 2 weeks left and I was like, okay, well, we'll see you next year. Like I wasn't believing in it. And his mother had ovarian cancer and she actually got 30 additional years and was the oldest surviving ovarian cancer patient at one point. So we kind of hope that the same would happen with him.
Yes, you'd have the same story. You've seen it. You've seen that miracle. It can be his story, his miracle. But it wasn't to be. What happened?
He ended up surviving for about 16 months. And I mean, some of them are good, some of them were terrible, And, I was kind of juggling, trying to thank God Tatum was on the road to recovery and she didn't really require a whole lot of my energy at that point. Whether it was because, I had bigger fish to fry and the focus was taken off of her, or, God gave me a break for a little bit. Things kind of eased up with her and I was able to focus more on him. And he was in a trial and he was that gold, he was a golden child. Like for anyone who has gone to chemo, you walk in and they give you these little rooms, or two, not even a room. You get a chair and maybe a chair to sit in front of whoever's in chemo. And he was doing so well that they actually would escort us in and give us our own private room. Like we were rock stars. And we really thought that he was headed to surgery. And, something went wrong. And within, I think 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we went from, superstars being ejected from the study itself. And that's when things went really bad.
I'm so sorry. You've experienced just profound loss from your husband's passing, your daughter's challenges with her health. And I'm just going to ask you again, what helped keep you going during those darkest moments?
I think, my children. I've always been in it for my kids. Ironically, the mother of six, I never thought that I would have kids. So, they're the things that pull me through, that keep me grounded. And also, I looked to them and I thought, you only have one life to live, not just me, not just Colin, but these kids. And yes, it's sad. Yes, we're going through a lot of gravity but I couldn't get stuck in it. So, I would try and when I was with them, focus on just them. Like I was able to put everything else behind me and whatever else was going on, just, live in my fantasy world, whatever that looked like. I would sneak downstairs with them and just play with them and just, focus on the future because they were always my future. They've always been my future. They still are my future. So they really are the thing. A lot of people say, what do you do, for yourself? How do you get away from your children? And I think, if it were not for them, I don't know that I would be here. Yeah, I enjoy, every minute of the chaos and, of course, not every minute.
Most
But
minutes.
yeah, pretty much, whatever. I think because I've seen how bad things can go, how quickly they can go badly too, is, I try and live every moment knowing that, life is to be lived. It's not to be, saved. You can't put it, your moments into a piggy bank. I think a lot of people wait to retirement. They wait, oh, till this point or to live. And, you're not guaranteed 2 minutes from now, a little less a year from now. So I'm a live in the moment kind of person.
I'm sure you definitely learned that during, your experiences because you had to. And I don't know how your daughter is today, but I imagine that you have unique challenges with a special needs child, both emotionally and logistically, all of those things.
She's 24 now, and she's a self-taught artist. But right from the get-go, when I had her, I had a lot of people telling me, what was good for her, what their, goals and objectives were for her. And I fought it very hard as a special needs parent to say, well, those are your goals, they're not mine. So, she went to school until it really was just not conducive. And, she's just found her way in the world. So as far as a special needs kid, it's funny because, none of us look at her like she's special needs. And sometimes, almost like you walk into your house and you don't smell whatever certain, characters say. I forget that she has special needs. And sometimes I'll see a picture of us, like a family picture. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I forget she's so small, because she's just Tatum to us. And she, is every bit a normal child. She interacts and is a huge part of our family. And so I guess, I have been blessed that I think the work that we put into her early on to make sure that she was independent and self-sufficient and we pushed her very, very hard at the start, which is hard to do because when you have a special needs kid who's in pain and suffering and, it's very hard to push them to be uncomfortable. And unfortunately you have to, because that's what, uncomfortable is what makes us all grow. And we all try to avoid it. No one wants to be challenged or suffering or, but those are the only ways to grow. So as hard as that was, she is suffered. When she turned 13, she also came down with a rare form of soft tissue cancer, which is completely unrelated to what she was. It's just, yeah, if you can choose your path, because people say that, they say, you choose the path. Well, she definitely wanted to learn the hard lessons the hard way because she's been learning since she came out of my
Oh,
womb. So
bless her heart. So things changed for you. You came into a second marriage, and that was okay for a while, but you experienced entirely different kind of challenges. Tell us what happened.
yeah, I think that, coming out of the first marriage and, losing Colin, like I said, those things that seem to serve us very well in some moments tend to really disservice us and others if you don't adapt. And, I had lived 10 years of, everything's fine. Don't look over there. Everything's fine. And I was living in this fantasy land where if I didn't acknowledge it, it wasn't happening. And when Colin passed away, everyone in our community knew us and were very good to us. And they just started grieving, And I had been grieving for 16 months. I had been, I lost my best friend, a little piece of him every day. So when everyone else was just starting to grieve, I was like, I can't sit in this anymore. I can't do it. And there was a gentleman that worked in my house as a contractor, and he was 10 years younger. He was, very cute, and he seemed to be exactly what I needed. He wasn't, when everyone else was like, slow down, take the time, grieve, and I didn't want to. And he was just fine with me not grieving, not talking about it, really not caring at all how I felt. And I did need that at the time, but it felt like he was honoring my space and, not trying to cross boundaries. By the time that I recognized it, he really just didn't care. He really didn't want me to talk. I was in it so deep that, and with so many, so much baggage from the past, survivor's guilt and attachment disorder, because I didn't want to lose one more thing in my life, that, it was really a decade of trying so hard to make something work when the person you're trying to make it work is doing nothing but sabotaging you at every turn. And so, yeah, it was a really tough decade of my life.
I can tell, looking back, we have 2020 vision when it comes to looking back. But what did you learn about protecting yourself or maybe protecting your finances, protecting your emotions that you want to share with someone else?
Everyone always asks me, like, what are red flags, And I don't think I need to tell anyone, because I think that everyone has that gut reaction. Yet we all have instincts, especially the women. We are very intuitive. And I think the best advice I can give to someone is that don't ignore it. Don't excuse it. Don't try and make nice for everyone. It's not your responsibility to keep a relationship going. It takes two people. And if you're working overtime and you're not getting where you want to be, then it's not working. And I spent a lot of years wondering, is it me? Am I causing this? Am I to blame? And when, push comes to shove and you get on the other side of it, it really doesn't matter. If you're not happy, whether you're the villain or the hero makes no difference. You're not happy and you need to get out, because again, you only have one life to live. Your children are living in a toxic environment. And another thing, is that you do need to protect yourself. We, as women, I think we tend to give up a lot of our autonomy, a lot of our financial security, thinking, that we're being selfish by holding something back, or, having our own account seems to be like we don't believe in our marriage, maybe. And I will say that my first marriage was everything that I ever wanted anything to be. But I didn't protect myself. And looking back on it, I want everyone to have the dream. It's a beautiful dream, and I hope everyone finds love. But it's okay to, know that things can go south, whether that means illness or divorce makes no difference. When Colin passed away, they called me a week later and they said, "Those credit cards aren't yours. Rip them up. They were your husband's," because I didn't have a job. I was a stay-at-home mom. And, I think it's great to want, I've always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. But it's kind of like when people have a dream to want to be a professional sports star. What do we tell them? Like, well, make sure you have a backup plan, things. But we don't tell women that, we don't say, like, make sure you have a backup, because it might not work out the way you want. And it's almost like if you do think that, then you somehow aren't committed to your marriage, or, you're somehow protecting yourself because you're not fully committed. And that's, the average woman, when they get divorced, their standard of living goes down 43%. The average man goes down 10. Men are almost set up for divorce. And, I'm not saying they do it on purpose, but it's just the reality of what we live. And it continues, I think, to get worse for women out there who, are stuck in these situations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I know when I went through my divorce, incredible statistics that that's kind of the highest population of impoverished people or divorced women, especially over a certain age. And thank God, it didn't become my story, and I'm so grateful to the Lord for that. But you talked about red flags and not dismissing them. Are there any subtle signs that that you saw that looking back now you're like, I should have seen that? Are there some that we can warn women about?
Again, every situation is different. You know, my situation was that he just didn't care about me. You know, I was always a drama queen. He was planting seeds behind my back, and he wouldn't come right out and say, like, you're crazy. He would say, like, do you think maybe you need to go see someone? Everything was an argument, everything. I lived in this complete state of confusion because what I would say is, like, oh, the sky is blue. And he'd be like, no, it's orange. And I'd be like, no, it's clearly blue. And he'd be like, nope, it's orange. And if somebody does that, then, you know, that's the big phrase now, gaslighting.
Gaslighting,
But yeah,
classic, classic.
it class, yeah. And if someone keeps telling you something that you know not to be true, don't alter your opinion on it. Don't, you know, say, well, you know, maybe we're just seeing. If you're living in confusion, there's a reason why. Because I would go to him with like the simplest of arguments, like, hey, can you not come home, you know, 4 hours late? And I would approach it like, okay, I have all my plan in action and I think about what I was going to say. And within 2 seconds, you know, we're no longer talking about him coming home late. We're talking about, you know, how I'm such a bad wife and I can't keep the kids, you know, quiet or you know, whatever it was. It just was like, I would be here. And the next thing I know, I'm turned around 3 times and I'm in tears. And I'm like, oh, why didn't I just keep my mouth shut? And that's what they do. They want you to keep your mouth shut. So if you can't seem to find resolution with anyone in your life, that's not just, you know, nurses come in all different forms, your bosses or what, but if you can't find resolution, then you have to safely assume if it's a cycle that it is not you and that you cannot have a conversation or relationship with somebody who is so hell-bent on sabotaging and manipulating and controlling you.
Yeah. Man, you have experienced so much at such a young age. And now tell us, how did you find the healing? Are you writing? Did you do some writing in your healing process?
Well, it's funny because I'm a writer now, but I wasn't. And when Colin had cancer, I wrote my first book at the time, though. So it's just coming off the throes of Tatum. And I was just having such a hard time processing because I would take her in for like a cold. And the next thing I know, she was, you know, flatlining. It was a crazy, crazy 4 years. So when I would sit at chemo with him, you know, he was so sick he didn't want to talk. So I had my BlackBerry. And I started writing Tatum's because it was just such a roller coaster ride. So I emailed it back to myself. And at the end, it flowed into Colin's story. And I had it sitting on my laptop for 10 years the whole time I was with my second husband. And, you know, he always told me I was a terrible writer. I was terrible at everything, I'll be honest with you. And so I really didn't have the confidence to, you know, I wrote other people's names, I wrote for other people, but I read, you know, when we got divorced or when we were in the throes of it, I finally came to a place where I read it and, you know, I got to the end of it and I thought it ends when Colin passes. It's called Notes from a BlackBerry because it's my notes from my BlackBerry. And I thought, gosh, you know, the crazy didn't even start yet. Like it didn't even, you know, begin. And then I started recognizing that, you know, nothing that happened to me in the first 10 years of that. You know, those memoirs were something I could do anything about. I didn't make any conscious decisions about, you know, cancer. But in the second relationship, I did. You know, I consciously, maybe not, you know, in my rightest mind, you know, I made conscious decisions that led to where I was at. So I sat down and after I released the first book, I thought, I'm releasing my second memoir, which will be out this fall. And it's called From Blackberries to Thorns. And it's really a recount of, you know, getting into a situation that before you know, and I hope when the readers read it, they will see that, you know, they don't come to you and say, all right, I'm going to make your life miserable. I'm going to treat your children horribly. I'm going to make you as crazy as I can. And then I'm going to tell everyone how crazy you are. It's like a progression of, wait a second, wait a second. And then you're in so deep, you don't know how to get out of it. So that's my second book. And then my third book, From Thorns to Blossoms is where I kind of unpack all of it and trying to make some life lessons and, you know, discuss really the key points and give people practical advice about what to do and how to set it up so that, you know, you are protected and you can do something that makes you feel powerful. And when you feel powerful, you know, you come to the table with a much different perspective than when you feel helpless.
Beautiful. And you've done so much since then. Tell us a minute. We have our time is going, but the Colin James Barth Outreach, a nonprofit. You started that. Why was it so important for you to do this?
Well, I think, like I said, coming off of two situations, actually, I've been in many different Julies, the special needs, the caregiver, in all these situations I found myself in. When you hit crisis, you don't even know what you need, right? A little less where to go to get help. So you turn to the government, government programs, that's what we all think about. And unfortunately, they won't help you until you have nothing. So you have to lose everything to get everything. And then they're like, oh, we'll help now. So organization was founded on, trying to provide that canopy for people, finding them the resources that are already out there, because we do not want to replicate anything. And so when you come to us, we're kind of like a concierge service where we know what we tell you what you're eligible for. We say, fill this out. You're going to need this. We give you what you need before you even know it. We tell you what you're eligible for so that you're not searching all the time and wasting time and energy. And really, we just want to provide you with a safety net to, so you're not starting from poverty, which is where most women start after they go through this. It takes the average woman a decade to recoup, just to stand on 2 feet. So that's kind of what our organization is dedicated to, is women who find themselves in times of, severe crisis and they don't know where to turn.
Wow, that's important work. Thank you so much for doing that. And I hope that in the show notes, we'll be able to give a link. So if women are interested in finding you or finding the Colin James Barth outreach, that they can do that. What does life look like for you today? What brings you the most joy?
I wake up in peace. I say to people a lot, everyone's looking for happiness. Happiness is great, don't get me wrong, but I'll take peace over happiness every day, because you can't even find happiness if you don't have it. So I wake up and I'm not worried who's doing what behind my back, lying, cheating, stealing, sabotaging. I just have peace in my heart. And when you have peace, everything else just seems to be more manageable. You can't really do much when you're sitting in a bed of chaos all the time.
Yes. Very good. How can women find you if they'd like to read your books, learn more about you, or the Colin James Barth Outreach?
My website is called juliebarthauthor.com. And from there, my daughter's art is featured on the website. There's a tab for her art, which is Hope, #4, TAYT. And some of the proceeds go to fund the charity. And there's also a link there to the CJB Outreach. There's plenty of tabs where you can, get involved, reach out to me. I man it all. So if you need help, I'm also there to help. We're really right now focused on, mapping out South Carolina, but I hope to be a great resource to people so that I can help you know what you don't even know, because that sometimes that's the hardest part.
Thank you so much for being here today. Hey, Bravehearts, you've heard a story of resilience and courage today, of turning tragedy into triumph. And perhaps you need to find that peace as well. I invite you also to my website, where I have a free download for you, lots of opportunities for you to learn about true peace. I'm going to leave you like I always do. This is Dawn Damon, your Braveheart mentor, asking you, is it time for you to find your brave and live your dreams? Hey, thanks for hanging out with me today and igniting your brave. Trust me, you'll never be the same. Now, for my free gift, make sure you click the link in our show notes. And to find out more about me, my books, or my amazing coaching course, visit braveheartedwoman.com. If you found help in this podcast, please like it, follow, and review me. It helps get the word out and up those algorithms so more amazing Bravehearts can find this message. You can also share it on your social media platforms or with someone you know who can really benefit. You can find my latest book, The Making of a Bravehearted Woman: Courage, Confidence, and Vision in Midlife, on Amazon and all the usual suspects. All right, this is Dawn Damon, as always, saying, find your brave and live your dreams.